Article 93 in a minute. I do want to recognize a visitor that came into the room during the hearing of the last bill. You certainly want to recognize, and I'll advise the committee on this, when you have someone from the media, from your home media, come in, you certainly want to recognize them. And with that, welcome Editor Gordon Garnos from the Watertown Public Opinion, that all of us get a copy of every morning out here to see what's going on in Northeast South Dakota. Welcome, Gordy. With that, we'll move to Senate Bill 93.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hamm.
I would you prefer I go to the other?
I don't think it's going to be that long. It's fine right there.
Thank you. Senate Bill 93 is enabling legislation to direct the South Dakota Investment Council to invest the money from school and public lands in the same way that they invest the South Dakota Retirement Fund. We passed the constitutional amendment, Amendment E, as you will well recall, in the last general election, and that changed the Constitution so that state, school, and public lands could be invested in stocks, bonds, and other prudent investments. And those monies will be distributed to the school district in the same manner as which previously they were distributed, which is on a per pupil ratio. It is also stated in the constitutional amendment that the inflation factor will be added back into the principal before distribution. The inflation adjustment period will be the fiscal year beginning July 1st and ending June 30th, except for this year, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. Also, I put an emergency clause on this bill because I think it's important that we're able to start investing that money as prudently and as quickly as we possibly can. With that introduction to the bill, I would like to introduce first Bryce Healy, who is sitting in the back row, that helped tremendously on the passing of Amendment E. I want to thank all of the school board, everybody that's even remotely associated with better education for our students in South Dakota that helped pass Amendment E. And I want to also help the legislators, because without it, it would not have passed. So I just say thank you, and then I would like to introduce, of course, the one that's at the steering wheel, our School and Public Lands Commissioner, Kurt Johnson, who we worked hand in hand to try and make more money for our school district. So I would like to introduce Kurt Johnson. Will you please do an explanation for this bill?
Welcome, Mr. Johnson.
Well, thank you.
Getting to be a real regular attendee here.
Yeah, well, I appreciate all the work that especially that Arlene took on putting this together to pass an Amendment E, and I visited with people like Dave Munson, who was very helpful, and all of you. I can't think of anyone who wasn't in support of it, and I'm glad that Gordy is here. Every newspaper, I believe, endorsed this too, at least all of those that I had contact with, and we certainly can't get these kinds of things done without a lot of help from a lot of people, and you people certainly deserve the credit for that. I'm only going to mention one little item in here before I turn it over to Matt Clark from the Investment Council. On page 3, there is on lines 19 through 22, there's just a little bit that talks about a 5% paid to the United States in the sale of public lands within the state. I look back, that's in the Enabling Act, and probably a person could have left it out, but because I can't even find where they've ever paid us anything for selling federal lands. But in the future, if they ever do, I'm going to be aware of it and make sure that we get our 5%. So that's in there. In case someone asks on the floor what that pertains to, it's just a little piece that's in the Enabling Act. With that, on the technical aspects of this bill, I'm going to turn it over to Matt Clark, who's been a 17-year employee of the Investment Council and has just done a terrific job. And I have a little handout for you to follow.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, Kurt. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, Mr. Chairman and other committee members. And I assume that you all have a copy of Senate Bill 93, and being passed out is a one-page set of discussion points, which hopefully highlight all of the key issues of Senate Bill 93. And as soon as everybody has a copy, I'll get started. As Arlene and Kurt indicated, this bill is basically intended to allow us to go forward and implement the recently passed constitutional amendment. And the reason for needing this bill is several-parted. Basically, the constitutional amendment indicated that we could invest in stocks, bonds, and other financial instruments as provided by law. Therefore, we need a law to actually determine what it is that we can invest in, because the constitutional amendment required there to be a law further spelling this out. And so Senate Bill 93 provides that. It also sets forth the procedures used to implement the inflation adjustment type procedure. And it also eliminates some of the old laws which are no longer necessary or are rendered mute by the new constitutional amendment. And so I'll just quickly run through these, starting with Section 1 of Senate Bill 93, dealing with the inflation adjustment portion. The constitutional amendment became effective on the most recent November 15th. And there is no law required to have the inflation adjustment portion become effective. That's already underway. And we're going to have to make an inflation adjustment for this upcoming year. But there was no spelling out of exactly how that was to be done. And so Section 1 basically acknowledges that the inflation adjustment requirement will begin on November 15th. Of 2000, that the inflation adjustment would be made each year at apportionment, so the balance of the fund will be increased by inflation, and it will come out of income or capital gains every year at apportionment, which is usually in February. It indicates that the rate of inflation to be used is the consumer price index, and that it will be based on a fiscal year period of time, so it will be based on a June 30th year end. Therefore, the first inflation adjustment will be a partial year, as Arlene indicated in her introductory comments, because we'll basically have this November 15th through June 30th period of time. So whatever the inflation is for that period of time will be the first adjustment, and that'll be adjusted for next February, just over a year from now. It also requires that net capital gains can be used to satisfy the inflation adjustment portion. If that isn't the case, then we're going to have an income problem, because if inflation is 3-4% and we only earn 6%, even if it's all in bonds and if it's in some in stocks with dividend yields being lower than interest rates, the actual income excluding capital gains might only be 4-5%. If we had to reduce from that the level of inflation, the income to be paid out would drop quite substantially. In the very long term, we'd have an awful lot more money and more income, you know, 40-50 years from now, but in the intervening time period, the income paid out would drop substantially. However, if we can use net capital gains to satisfy that inflation provision, then the income will not be hit nearly as much. For that. Section 2 exempts the school investment fund from the legal list indicated in Section 4526. That is the law that sets forth the investment procedures that are basically applied to the cash flow fund, which is fixed income only. All state investment assets are subject to that law unless they're specifically excluded. And in that law, the retirement system and cement plant retirement systems are currently specifically excluded, and therefore we need to also add the school and lands fund to that provision to have them specifically excluded from 4526. So that would take care of them being forced into just fixed income. We still need some law to indicate how it can be managed because the constitutional amendment required one. And therefore, Section 6 applies Section 4527, which is a prudent man rule, which was put in there for the retirement system. And so basically, the School and Public Lands Fund would fall under the same law of prudent man investment management as the retirement system is. Sections 3, 4, 5, and 9 deal with the definition of income and how it is paid out. First, to adjust the amount paid out for the inflation level if it's not fully satisfied by net capital gains. And then also to broaden the definition of income to include dividends and other types of income from the newly allowed investments. Before, it was only interest because you can only invest in bonds or the rental income from the land that had been held. But now that we would be able to invest, if all of this goes forward, in stocks and other types of investments, we would need to include the income from those forms of investments as well. Sections 7 and 8 would be repealing two sections now that require losses due to market losses to be made up for in the fund. These laws are basically superseded by the new constitutional amendment, which prescribes that only losses caused by unconstitutional acts need to be made up. Therefore, if there are investment losses, they will simply be made up by future investment gains that are not used for satisfying the inflation provision. And also, I would note that capital gains that aren't used for satisfying the inflation provision and making up for any previous losses, any of those surplus gains that are generated over time would simply be retained in the fund because they're not defined as income for purposes of paying out income. And then finally, Section 10, as Senator Hamm indicated, declares an emergency exists so that we can go ahead and start changing the investment policies as soon as an emergency law would become effective, which would be much quicker, hopefully, than the ordinary June 30th date. And finally, at the bottom, we have a little example, which reminds us all that the balance of the school fund, based on a cost basis, which is how the balance is measured, is around $122 million. And the consumer price index for the most recent year was around 3.7%. If it continues around that level, the inflation adjustment to the fund each year would be around $4.5 million and growing as the fund grew. We're hopeful that inflation will be a little bit less than that going forward, but it very well could be that amount. And this little example just shows you how the fund would grow with inflation over time. And that's it for my remarks, unless there are any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. I'm sure that you'll probably have some questions, because any time that anyone from your investment group down there comes to the legislature, there are questions, I'm sure. And so with that, Senator Dugard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In your definition in Section 1, or not definition, but in the discussion about how the inflation adjustment is made, in Subpart 4, you say, you know, the requirement will be met using realized net capital gains, and if these are not sufficient, then interest, dividends, and other income shall be used. And by that, I think one could infer that other income, the term other income, does not include realized net capital gains. Would that be right?
Yes. It wouldn't be clear from this language alone whether other income would include realized capital gains or not. However, there are attorney general opinions that have been repeated many times over the past 50 years or more that outline that income does not include realized capital gains. And we set forth an argument that The reason why the Attorney General opinion indicated that realized capital gains should not be considered income rested in large part on the desire to allow the fund to be preserved against the erosive effects of inflation. And therefore, since we were specifically dealing with taking care of the inflation problem in the new constitutional amendment, that it made sense to therefore allow the realized capital gains to be used at least for that purpose of satisfying the inflation provision. And they seem to agree with that line of reasoning. And but for payout purposes, it's only interest, dividends, and any rental type income, or that form, not capital gains. But they can be used to offset the inflation provision. And other than that, they'll just kind of pile up over time to take care of any losses, or hopefully grow the fund even more than inflation over time, if that's possible.
Thank you. May I ask one more?
Certainly.
Following years where you've had, let's say, as we did in the 1990s, where you had a lot of growth due to appreciation of assets, and where the net realized capital gains will be quite large, mm-hmm. let's say, and easily in excess of the inflation adjustment factor, then, if I understand it correctly, you'll make an inflation adjustment to the principal amount, and that will remain, yet the additional net realized capital gains will also remain in the fund. At the end of the first year, you know, following such a scenario, when you make the inflation adjustment, do you apply the inflator to last year's number, which was inflated, or do you apply it to last year's number, which was inflated, plus the remaining net realized capital gains?
The first. It, as I understand it, it would be this $122 million, the current cost basis of the fund, increased each year by the inflation level. To the extent that we're ahead of that, because we've had net realized capital gains in excess of inflation, any of those excess net capital gains are carried over, as indicated in the sentence following what you read in point four. And therefore, there would be a running total. And so the inflation number effectively becomes the minimum
right.
amount that it needs to be. And to the extent we're above that, you know, all we need to do is make sure that we keep that principal balance above that minimum amount, which is that $122 million growing at inflation every year. And so if we have a few years of good times, then we'll have some cushion built up to take care of this inflation adjustment in poorer times to follow, so that we don't have to eat into income so much.
I have one more question, Mr. Chairman, if I may. In that subpart 4 on page 2, in line 9, should we insert the word realized net capital gains so it's perfectly clear that you're talking about the same thing as you're talking about in line 7? Would that be helpful? So no argument could be made that you're talking about unrealized capital gains?
That would make it more clear. I can't think of any reason why it would be harmful. It may be unnecessary to the extent that fund's procedures have all been based on realized gains, you know, as driven by Attorney General opinions in the past. But certainly that lessens the risk there could be any misinterpretation of that, and so that would seem to make sense to me. That anywhere that it talks about net capital gains or losses, that they be described as net realized capital gains or losses.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Would you care to address that then? Would you like to make that change?
If that would be in order, I'd make that amendment.
Sure.
No, I'd offer that amendment. On page 2, line 9, after the word excess, insert the word realized. That would be my motion.
Second.
Seconded the motion by Senator Dugard, seconded by Senator Hamm, that on line 9, after the word excess, the word realized be added. Reading then, any excess realized net capital gains shall be carried forward for the following year's inflation adjustment. Is there any discussion on that motion to amend? Senator Olson.
Just have a second to make sure that we don't have it any other place. I don't think we do, but...
It says up above that it's realized.
Yeah. No, but I mean other parts of the right. bill. Okay.
Comfortable with that?
Yeah.
Any further discussion on that motion to amend? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Senate Bill 93 is now amended. Any further questions of Mr. Clark? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Matt, I'm assuming November 15th is used because it was after the canvas. Is that right?
My understanding is that, yeah, whenever the Secretary of State certifies the election as official, that the new amendment became effective at that point.
Okay, thank you.
Except for the provisions that, you know, the amendment requires there to be a law for.
I guess I noticed as I read through the bill that there's a lot of things that are repeated in various sections just to make everything kind of fall into place.
A lot of it's just cleanup of some of the old bills.
That's dangerous.
that we wanted to strip out that might conflict. If it didn't conflict with what we were trying to do now, we didn't want to get involved with it.
With our past experiences with the investment people, we certainly have a lot of faith in what you're recommending to us. Does anyone else have any questions of Mr. Clark? Thank you, Mr. Clark.
Thank you.
Greet Mr. Myers for us.
Will do.
Any further proponents of Senate Bill 93?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Gene Ank representing the Associated School Boards. Well, I want to take this opportunity to recognize Senator Hamm's efforts. It seemed like she was in my office about once a month or more over the past year. And as they say, the devil's in the details, and I'm sure glad we have people like Mr. Clark to deal with those devilish details. We certainly support this. It's just great to see it get to this point. It's something that has been looked at, handled, tried to deal with over a period of time, and we're sure glad it's there.
Any questions of Mr. Ink? Thank you. Any further proponents?
I could just do this from here. If the Roberts SDA, you know, I don't have to say anything.
Fine. Thank you, Ms. Roberts. SDA?
Mr. Chairman, ditto.
All right. We're getting there. Hey, we're on the same page now, aren't we? I hope we stay that way. Anyone else? Any other proponents? Any further proponents? Any further questions from the committee of the proponents before we move on? We'll move on then to opponents of Senate Bill 93. Any opponents? Seeing no opponents, we'll close for committee discussion and action on Senate Bill 93.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hamm.
I move a due pass on Senate Bill 93.
As amended. Senator Hamm moves the due pass as amended. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Senator Olson. Any committee discussion? Hearing none, Secretary will call the roll on Senate Bill 93, due pass as amended.
Dugard?
Aye.
Hamm?
Aye.
Hutmacher?
Aye.
McIntyre? Munson?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Bros?
Aye.
6 yeas, 1 excuse.
Senate Bill 93 goes to the floor, due pass as amended.